Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini, episode number 481. This is your FDH Lounge dignitaries, Rick Morris and Kyle Ross, the princes of the pigskin, coming your way, if you will. We are coming your way after week seven, anomaly Sunday, if you will, a day that proved truly that science is dead. There is no more logic or reason in the universe. Why are we all still here, Kyle Ross? I don't mean to get existential on everybody, but it seems unavoidable under the circumstances. I will point out to everyone, before I get into my numbers for last week, I said 2 weeks ago this was going to be my high water mark for the season. I said, if you're going to jump off, this is the point. I was 45 and 31 at that point in time. If you jumped off and you went against me the last 2 weeks when I was 4-10-1 the previous week and 3-12 last week, you are now 71-48-1 for the season. You're welcome by more conventional straight-up metrics in terms of what I said to do. I'm 52-53-1 with my 3-12 last week. 1-2 on my big three, 0-1 on my lock, 9-10 for the season on the big three, 3-4 on the lock. Those are not that much more putrid than general at this point in time during the season. Kyle Ross with another 3-2 week in the black, 6 weeks out of seven, 19-12 for the season. So congratulations, Kyle. You at least survived Anomaly Sunday.
Yeah, I'm just shocked you're a conservative lamenting the death of science. I've heard it all now. I mean, wow. I mean, where's this show going to go? Wow.
Still a creationist, but still.
Okay. Well, we'll work. Well, I got 45 minutes here with you, so I'll see what I can do.
Yes, exactly. We'll get into the slate this week with, and again, I'll try to do better. You don't have to do a whole lot better than last week because, again, you're going very strong for the season. We have a lot of sharply defined opinions, I know, on the games to come here. We'll start, as always, with the Thursday nighter. It's the Chargers at the Broncos, 5-2 San Diego, 5-1 Denver, 8:25 Eastern Time, Sports Authority Field at Mile High on the NFL Network and CBS. Nance, Sims, and Wolfson are on the call. Denver is laying 8 in this one, up from 6.5 at the open. And as I look at this, again, it's been a very spirited matchup between these teams in the games in Denver in recent years. The Chargers have tended to do quite well. I don't see a big gap between the teams this year. I know, Kyle, and you have theorized that, again, everyone is just so much on Denver. They're inflated. That's what you said to me a couple weeks ago when I went, why ask why on the Arizona game? I'm going to do it again. I think this line is absolutely insane, given how San Diego has played in Denver in recent seasons. I don't get it at all. Hence, I'm all over the Broncos laying the 8, because what do I know?
I think you should trust your initial instincts here, Ricky. As always, great to be on the program, by the way. You know, we're winning here, it seems, week after week, at least on this end, and really the only challenge is to get it all done in the 45 minutes. But here we go, and right off the bat, a recommendation. Third straight week, I'm recommending you play the Thursday game. Not going to be going 5 games this week, only 3. I wish I could play by Las Vegas Super Contest rules, but alas, I'm being chickening out. I'm just going with 3. This is the first one. It's San Diego. You talk about that past success in Denver. They've covered 5 straight times in Denver, including twice last year. They won outright in the regular season, oh, by the way, on a Thursday night, and then they backdoored them in the playoffs, a game that I infamously claimed they might be able to win straight up, and Jason Jones was doing what Jason Jones does on Facebook after that, but that's a different story for a different day. San Diego, and we've talked about this in the past. I remember we had this conversation numerous times last year, in fact. They just match up well with Denver. Obviously, it goes back to Mike McCoy being the former offensive coordinator there. If San Diego can do what Kansas City did to them last week, and that's dominate the time of possession, which sometimes can be an overrated statistic. You do need to score when you hold on the ball, but I think San Diego can. They scored 30 or more in every game before last week's loss to the Chiefs. I see no reason why they can't stand this number. Ricky, I have brought this up so many times to you over the last year. The Chargers have lost a grand total of one game by more than one possession since the start of last season, and it was that fluky, no-good, late-night start in Oakland that was a result of a conflict with the MLB playoffs. Don't think they'll win straight up, which can be dangerous when you take the points, but I do believe the Chargers keep it the one-score game. First recommendation of the week.
Let me give you a little bit of a devil's advocate here and see what you have to say. Well, first of all, the one conventional metric I think that points me towards Denver as far as liking their ability to win this game, giving up 74.3 yards per game on the ground, that is going to keep the Chargers from being a balanced team, which has been critical to their success, unless they can do what few teams have done on Denver to this point. But what I want to play devil's advocate on specifically is the hallmark of when I throw out a why-ask-why game is because it seems too friggin' obvious. Are you a little bit concerned that there's no rational explanation for Denver laying 8 points to San Diego in this one? I mean, you try to steal
stuff
all the time.
No, I see what you're saying, but I knew this line was going to move. Plus, first of all, moving past seven, that's such a key number. I knew that was going to happen because everyone just watched Denver look impressive as all hell last Sunday night against San Francisco. To me, I think most people are like, oh, how can you bet against Denver right now? I mean, the majority of bets are still on the Broncos as of, you know, the time we're doing this show. I expect that to still be the case when the game kicks off Thursday night. I mean, I don't know how you don't make the case that Denver's not the Super Bowl favorite right now by a mile. I sent you my power rankings this morning. I know you sent me mine, yours as well. Denver is in a tier to itself right now, and I know that seems odd that I'm playing against them. I just think short week, you know, an opponent off a loss, San Diego's going to give them their best shot here. There is some trepidation. I've kind of pulled back from the notion that the Chargers can win this game. I don't think they will, but they just match up well with Denver. I really think that is the line move is classic. You know, oh, we just watched a good team look really good on TV, which, as I pointed out to you in our show notes, sounds a lot like the internet wrestling community, by the way, these days.
Yes, it very well might. And by the way, and this is a hallmark, again, I suppose, of a why-ask-why pick. Me, it wouldn't be the most shocking thing in the world to me if San Diego won this game, and yet I'm on Denver. But that's why I make the pick the way that I do. Moving on to Sunday's games here. The 5-2 Lions versus the 2-5 Falcons, 9:30 a.m. Eastern time at Wembley Stadium in London. So I guess we've got a triple header of football coming our way this week as they're going to time it before the 1 o'clock starts Eastern time. I want to apologize very quickly as we're going along here to any of our UK listeners out there, any of our English friends. You get the worst games. I'm sorry about that. I'd love to tell you people that you're going to get Seattle, San Francisco one of these years, but I just don't see it. We give you guys garbage because nobody wants to make the travel plans and nobody wants to give up a home date. And it sucks. It's unfair for you guys. I'm really sorry about that. I wish the NFL was a little bit better in that regard. The call on this one is going to be the Fox A team of Brenneman, Aikman, and Thompson. That's with the playoffs being underway, the MLB playoffs. So that makes it the temporary A team. Kyle, this is a game where I look at it. Detroit is laying 3.5 up from 3 in this one. Atlanta's technically the home team, but the very definition of a neutral field here.
We're not in the Georgia Dome anymore, Dorsey. We're not in the Georgia Dome anymore, are we?
No. And there's not going to be anything as explosive as Goldberg v. Hogan happening here. But
reference already.
Yes, nor Davey Boy Smith, Bret Hart, which, of course, went on in this yard back 22 years ago. But everything points to Detroit. I cannot make any kind of a case whatsoever for Atlanta. So you know what? Again, I'm on Atlanta because last week caught me science is dead. Nothing means nothing, Kyle Ross. Nothing means nothing. Teams will rise up when you least expect it. And if there's a game where a team has no chance in hell, truly, it's the Atlanta Falcons. And you know what? After last week, I'm on the Falcons. Give me the 3.5. They may win outright.
You got a nice little gimmick working for yourself here this week, huh? I wanted to go back to the Thursday. There's one thing I want to mention, the Thursday night game.
Yeah.
The whole thing with the blowouts that we got at the beginning of the year, I think that we're going to see the game start to get closer, too. So that's another thing. I think people are still thinking, oh, these games are going to be blowouts. It's Thursday night. The last two have been close, so that's another reason to take the points. But I digress. Let's go to this game here.
Okay.
I think the scenario you just laid out is basically the only way you can be on Atlanta here. And to be honest, it's, you know, kind of a scenario that sometimes I'll subscribe to.
Yep.
Eventually, the Falcons have to win, don't they? They failed to cover four in a row coming into this game. But I'm starting to get the feeling that that regression back up to the mean ain't happening this year. This team just doesn't look good at all. They got waxed by Baltimore last week. Now, I'll say this. This does, to your point, have kind of the makings of a game where you'll get a head-scratching result and Chris Berman will come on at night and be like, see, they just had to go to England to get that road win. And it's like, yeah, that's fine. But
home win.
Yeah. But here's the problem with taking Atlanta here. From a matchup perspective, this game's a nightmare. Their offensive line is awful. And they're going against Detroit's defensive line, which may be the best in the league. I don't know how Atlanta's going to protect Matt Ryan in this game. I'll tell you what, he may want to get the phone number for Lloyd to London now that he's on that side of the pond, because this could get real ugly for him. Detroit, I'd be hesitant to lay the points, though, because they kind of really pulled one out of their arse against New Orleans last week. So I'm staying away. I'm staying away.
Well, not only that, too, the England games are sort of like Thursday night games where there's a little bit more of a vibe. But anything could happen, folks, you know, because you just get the weird and the inexplicable kind of happening a little bit more. So, the first time around, I thought Oakland might win outright against Miami. So we're almost overdue for some weirdness because Oakland got curb stomped in that one here. Atlanta, I look for them to supply the weird where we least expect it.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to mention here real quick, you kind of talk about we're giving them so some of the, them being England, some of the dog games. You know, as much as some diehards and kind of old school fans want to make fun of this thing that the NFL is doing, just kind of throwing a game over there, it's actually working when you look at some business numbers. Betting on the NFL has exploded in the UK since they started doing this. Exploded. Just throwing it out there.
It has, but I'm just saying that they're half-assing it. I mean, how much better would things be if we gave these people some actual good football? You know what I mean? And they're sophisticated enough.
What do they know?
No. There's a lot of them that understand just truly, I mean, how bad this is. I'm not going to say everybody over there, but there's a lot of them that are just like, gee, thanks a lot, guys. Vikings and Jaguars again. You know, so
they should be happy.
Well, yeah, I don't think we would be if we were getting these crappy matchups. Not that this next one would be any better. The Empire State Bowl, it's the 4-3 Bills at the 1-6 Jets. More like the Toilet Bowl, perhaps, folks. You've got Kevin Harlan and Rich Gannon on the call, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford on CBS. This is a game where the Jets are laying 3. It opened at 2.5, and one of a number of these that I found to be very, very difficult. Your show notes made a very, very good point, something I had noticed independently here. Of course, that being first and foremost, these are both teams with very good run defenses. As you pointed out wisely, the Bills are now down Spiller and Jackson in that. Two very, very iffy passing games. Well, Geno Smith, as horrid as he is, can at least lean on Chris Ivory and Chris Johnson. Advantage Jets. I say they get off the Schneid and cover to 3 at home.
I'd back the Jets, but not laying points. No thanks. I mean, this does seem to be a spot. You know, the Jets got the spark with the Percy Harvin trade. That's surprising. You know, that kind of happened after our last show that we did, the last time we talked. So they've got a bit of a spark. Buffalo, I did say, you know, by the way, can't wait. Next week I'll be there in person with you, Ricky. We'll be doing our midweek show where we kind of revisit our preseason predictions.
Okay.
Mea culpas on some teams, double down on some others. I know I picked the Bills to make the playoffs before the year. I'm kind of off that now. Certainly the loss of Spiller and Jackson is huge. There's no denying that Kyle Orton is a better. You can't deny that he's better than E.J. Manuel. He just is. But I think it was a real short-sighted kind of move by the Bills to do this. They're obviously desperate to make the playoffs. So, you know, look, if I were to stick with my preseason pick, I'd obviously go Bills here, but I can't. This just feels like, okay, the Jets, they've taken their beatings, you know, 6 weeks in a row. As I predicted before the season, they're 1-6. I talked about the schedule, the gauntlet of quarterbacks they would run. You know, now things get a little bit better. The Jets will win a couple games from here on out. This could be one, but I am not interested in laying the points to the New York Jets at all.
I don't blame you at all on that one, no question about it. By the way, too, we'll talk about this more next week, as you said. Whether it be the Bills, whether it be the Squealers, whether it be the Dolphins, we talked about this before the season. There will be one horrifically unworthy team making the AFC playoffs. It is going to be terrible. And when you look at the NFC right now, the fact that one of these teams out of these five is not going to make it, the Cowboys, the Eagles, the Seahawks, the 49ers, and the Cardinals, you talk about unfair. You talk about federal lawsuits that should be filed against the NFL. To be in the NFC right now, to be a good team, it is a very, very big handicap versus being in the AFC, where at least one bad team will make the playoffs and probably at least two or three other mediocre ones based on how we're going. We shall see. One of the teams that's on that bubble, actually both of these teams are, but I consider the one team off the bubble already because they're a fraud and they're showing it. That would be the 3-3-1 Panthers. They're hosting the 3-3 Seahawks. 1 o'clock Eastern time Sunday from Bank of America Bailout Stadium in Charlotte. You've got Ian Eagle, Dan Fouts, and Jenny Dell on the call for CBS. This is a line where Seattle's laying 5.5 up from 3. And, again, I've gone down with the ship, the Seahawks, the last couple weeks. And you know what? Ultimately, again, just sheerly out of contempt for Carolina, the most fraudulent first-place team in the history of the NFL, which they still are because they basically gravy-trained two wins at the beginning of the season with a tiny bit of momentum from last year. They are the fraud that we said that they were. Their hold on first place is going to be very short-lived, even though they're in football's worst division, and it all starts here. Seahawks, I'm a broken record, but Seahawks turn it around and roll here, play the 5.5.
I'd love to take them to bounce back, but I like points on the road. No.
What
I agree with you about Carolina. First of all, I kind of scoff at your momentum from last year. I can't subscribe to that notion. You know how I feel about momentum. But I will agree with you about Carolina and their fortunes from here on out. You know, I picked them. I was on the real low side. I think I said 5 wins before the year. They're going to get more than that. But I still think they're like a 7-8-1 team when all's said and done. Yeah, I'm with you. I don't, you know, ironically, Seattle, I think they're going to need their offense to come through in this game to pull it off. Carolina has proven at times they can score. Their defense is nowhere near where it was last year. I thought the secondary wasn't very good to begin with. They just had a very good front seven. But without Greg Hardy, they're not at last year's level. But neither is Seattle, quite frankly, Ricky.
Yeah.
I mean, there had to be some regression off of his all-time historically great season, but they're not getting a pass rush. This could be a high-scoring game.
Here's the thing, though. When I look at regression for Seattle, I look at actually the opposite of that, progression to the mean. 15th in the league against the pass. How long is that going to hold up? Know what I mean? They're too good to be 15th in the league against the
Well,
pass.
They have played a tough schedule so far. I mean, they've gone against Green Bay. They've gone against San Diego. They've gone against Denver. They've played some good teams. So, look, I don't think it's quite time to panic yet in Seattle. I had St. Louis last week, oh, by the way. That was a real nice winner, huh? Fisher, after we called him out, some of his best coaching in his career got – it's nice to see that – an underdog coach realize the underdog and use an underdog strategy, if that makes sense. But, you know, people can scoff at that kind of gimmickry, but if you're the Rams, that's what you have to do to beat the Seahawks.
Well, and that was that was what they did to beat them. Something cheap. You're right about that.
I don't think it was cheap. I thought it was smart. I mean, cheap. Get out of town.
That was
get
a Ric Flair nut shot that they used. That was a mule kick there, Kyle Ross.
No,
come on.
They used their brain is what they did. They used their brain. I'm with Carolina, though. I got confused. You know, we went. You mentioned that AFC bubble or how there's going to be a there's going to be a real stinky team making it out of the AFC, that last wild card. I imagine we're going to be spending a great deal of time on that next week. Now, Carolina, their only shot over in the NFC is to win this odious NFC South. And I don't think that's going to happen because, as I always point out at the start of every year, there has never been a repeat champion in the history of the NFC.
Yeah. Worst division in football. And there won't be a repeat champion this year. The Panthers are frauds. They will continue to recede. Up next,
wow,
it's the Battle of the Sunshine State. It's the 3-3 Dolphins at the 1-6 Jaguars for 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Everbank Stadium in Jacksonville on CBS. Andrew Catalan, Steve Tasker, and Steve Berline. Yay! Because that means the three of them won't be on my Browns game again this week. I've had about enough of them, quite frankly. So the line in this one is Miami laying 6. That is up from 4 initially. And there's a couple things that really kind of jump out at me about this game. The one thing in particular is that Miami has been very, very effective on the ground everything, whether it be No'Shawn Moreno, whether it be Lamar Miller in there, 136.3 yards per game as I squint to get the number here from USA Today Sports Weekly with their four-point type on that number there. But that is something that makes you think that they're going to be able to pound the ball more effectively, certainly than my Brownies did last week. More about that when we get to the Browns game. But I look at this, and again, the one thing I've been pretty consistent on is being a skeptic on Miami. They're not going to sleep through the game and take it for granted and smoke blunts ahead of time like the Browns did last week. But you know what? It's another thing to say they're going to cover 6 points. The Dolphins, notwithstanding what they did last week, are 6 points better than a small, small number of teams. And if you're not 6 points better than Jacksonville, you may not be 6 points better than anyone in the league. But the Dolphins realistically may not still be better, 6 points better than anybody in the league. Take the Jags.
Okay, I think I follow that.
congratulations if you were able to.
Okay. I'll say this. You know, we got the good Ryan Tannehill last week.
Yeah.
If you're a Miami guy, he looked pretty good. I mean, you know, I'm not ready to quite give up on him yet. I wouldn't put him at even a replacement level yet, but, you know, he's capable of a good game. I mean, he looked real good on the road. I'm always leery of betting on a bad team, and make no mistake about it, Jacksonville is a bad team. Awful win. But, man, the way this line is moving, there's some value maybe with Jacksonville. I'm kind of with you, and what I took you to be saying is that Miami should never be this large of a road favorite against anyone. And I'm inclined to agree. I'm not going to recommend it, but if this one gets up to like 7, which I think it may be at like at least one book right now, and some others could follow, ooh, Jacksonville gets tempting. This is another one of those games where the amount of wagering is totally out of whack. Like I think Miami's drawing 86% of all action, way too high for a Dolphins team that resides in that very large grouping of Jekyll and Hyde teams in the NFL right now. I cannot, because Jacksonville's off a win, I'm sort of lukewarm on them. It was kind of a real stinky win too.
Yep.
But ooh, I could never recommend Miami in this spot. No, no, no.
Right. Totes agree with everything you said there. No question. Up next, it's the 3-4 Bears at the 4-2 Patriots. 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. On Fox, it's Sam Rosen, past lounge guest, by the way, John Lynch, and the delicious Pam Oliver on the call. This is one where New England is laying 7. I'm sorry, they're laying 6 points. It opened at 7, and again, it's a spot where the Bears, again, they're kind of at a low ebb as far as how the public is viewing them after that embarrassing laydown against the Dolphins last week. The Patriots, I think the Patriots are sort of like the 49ers at this point, where everyone just freaks out too positively and too negatively on them. They're at a ridiculously high ebb right now. Nobody sees any problems with them whatsoever. I see one as far as this matchup goes. 126.3 yards per game given up on the ground. Matt Forte having an MVP-type season, maybe the MVP, because I'm still leery about DeMarco Murray making it through all 16. He never has before. Again, hard to be MVP if you're not on a playoff team, so Forte's got that to confront as well. But in terms of the kind of season that he's having, I don't like the Patriots laying this many points in this kind of a spot. A real desperation game for the Bears after the eggs that they've laid in some recent weeks here. Give me the Bears getting the six on the road against New England.
I almost recommended this one this week. The Bears, that is. New England's got a lot of injuries piling up right now. And I'm with you that the Bears are in that, you know, desperate spot this week. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, some teams have failed in that spot. Atlanta's kind of failed in that spot a couple weeks in a row now. But I just cannot fathom that Chicago's as bad as they showed last week. I mean, to no-show a home game against Miami, that's bad. I'll talk more about them next week because this is not a playoff team, something that I said they'd be at the start of the season, Chicago, that is.
Right.
But I can see them staying in this one throughout. This was the worst spread team in the league last year, and they've been better on the road this year than at home. They haven't covered a home game this year. Their record at home, at least against the spread under Mark Trestman, is just putrid. I mean, it is awful. I mean, they've covered one time in 2 years under him at Soldier Field. I don't know what's going on over there at Lake Michigan, but might want to stop drinking the water. This just fell short of a recommendation for me. It did. I thought about, there was some smart money that showed up right away that caught my eye, that took this number down from 7 to 6.5, like almost immediately. I think this was the first line to move. That's something to keep in mind as well.
That definitely is. Those are always the kind of things that can really pay off to pay attention to, as you've talked about previously on the show. Up next, it's the 2-4 Rams at the 3-3 Chiefs. 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City on Fox on Sunday. The city of St. Louis unable to avenge the 1985 I-70 World Series on the baseball diamond. They will attempt to do so on the gridiron this week. It is Dick Stockton, Donovan McNabb, Christina Pink on the call. Again, a very eclectic group that they put Dick Stockton in with. I almost think they're playing announcer bingo at Fox here just to mix it up as strangely as they can, put the other combinations with no continuity or anything like that. Kansas City is laying 7 in this one, up from 6 at the outset. There's a couple things that make me think that the edge should probably go Kansas City's way after what they did to San Diego last week. You look at the fact that the Rams did, as you pointed out earlier, reestablish the pass rush last week, but that's something that didn't bother the Chiefs against San Diego. Alex Smith got knocked down 3 times on sacks alone, and it didn't stop them from winning the game. So even if you figure the Rams are going to keep bringing the noise, that doesn't mean that the Chiefs can't win the game. So that kind of leans and makes me go that way. Ultimately, I just think this is too many points yet. I'm getting to be more of a believer in Kansas City as we go along here. But I'm going to go on the Rams just to cover. Don't think they'll win. I'll take them to cover. I realize I'm going against your boy, Mark Lawrence, here with his division sandwich theory here. It is a division sandwich game situation for the Rams. But notwithstanding that, on the short journey cross state, I do think they can hang close enough here. I'll take the Rams in the 7.
Ooh, I forgot about that division sandwich. That intrigues me a little bit more.
It's in this week's USA Today Sports Weekly, so give a shout-out again there for having read it there.
Okay, I like that. 7 is a 7.5, I believe, at the always popular 5 dimes. If you can get it, you got to lay a little extra juice for that half point, but might be worth it, because if it's final, you know, if the game is decided by 7, then you win and everyone else doesn't. I'm not interested in this game, though. You got 2 teams off straight-up dog wins. I don't like taking teams off straight-up dog wins. So I have no choice here, really.
All right, that makes sense. Up next, this is going to be an unbelievable matchup with some real playoff connotations. Don't know if we'd have said it at the beginning of the season. The 5-1 Cardinals. The Eagles, of course, will be hoping to be coming back here in February for the Super Bowl, 4:05 Eastern Time at University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale on Fox. Chris Myers, Rondé Barber, Jennifer Hale on the call. A little surprised Fox didn't go a little more generous on the announcing team for a game of this magnitude, but that's just my sense of it. Arizona is laying 2.5, had been 3 initially, so clearly the odds maker is very wishy-washy on who's the better team when you figure that this game is at Arizona. Yeah. Here's what I look at. Both teams are 5-1, notwithstanding having disappointing ground games to this point in the season. So I look at, in the last 10 games, who's more likely to progress to the mean, and not that we're necessarily likely to see it all in this game. That's only 10% of the remaining games, my rudimentary grasp of math tells me, but still. And my answer is, you to see better run production. They started to get it last week. Andre Ellington is banged up. And when you're banged up, there's just less that can be done about that. So ultimately, I do like Philadelphia in this spot because I think that they're going to continue the momentum, I'll use that word again, with their ground game and establish it positively on the road this week.
You love those rushing numbers, don't you?
I do indeed.
You love those rushing numbers. I don't know. I'll tell you what I don't love is that by rule, one of these teams is going to be 6-1 at the end of this week. This is kind of like Indy Cincinnati I talked about last week where this is the NFC's version of what I thought would be the regression bowl, and it is not, although ironically Cincinnati, we have started to see them regress somewhat. So at least I might be right on one of those two in the AFC. The winner here, it's going to be tough for me to make a case next week that team, whoever wins here, isn't going to the playoffs. 6-1 is a mighty fine record. Both teams are overperforming my expectations this year. Arizona, I've just completely given up on trying to figure them out. I don't know how they win every week at all. I'm passing on this game.
Okay. I can understand that. It's a tough one. Up next here, the 0-6 Raiders at the 3-3 Browns. 4:25 Eastern time from First Energy Heating Bills or Too High Stadium in Cleveland on CBS. Spiro Ditas, Solomon Wilcox are on the call. The Browns are laying 7 in this one, notwithstanding the massive turd that they laid in Jacksonville a week ago. And again, it's interesting to me that the line is what it is. I think people are looking at the fact of, okay, Browns, Jekyll and Hyde, home versus road. I think everyone is just coming to the, you know, leaping to that conclusion. Okay, worst or second worst team in the league that they're playing, and it's at home. Browns will massacre them. You know what? After what happened a week ago, they got a lot to prove to me. That ground game was nowhere near what it was previously with all-star center Alex Mack on the sidelines. This offensive line is a shambles all of a sudden. And it's the running game that has helped keyed everything else offensively here, kept the offenses off balance. For as much as everyone was on Brian Hoyer a week ago on his case, and justifiably so, you saw last year what happens when a team doesn't have a rushing attack. The Browns, after they foolishly traded Trent Richardson, had the worst rushing attack in the league, and it looked like shades of it.
That was a great trade. That was a great trade.
I'll never
great
let go
trade.
Of that. I'll never admit I was wrong. So,
that was a great trade.
They in this one, all right, Joe Banner.
For a terrible player.
All right, Joe Banner fan. Go ahead and get your pom-poms out.
I'm not a Joe Banner fan. I'm just a fan of good trades.
Well, again, they had a horrible rushing attack after they traded him last year, and with three running backs infinitely better than anybody that was on their roster last year, it was pretty shaky last week.
Including Trent Richardson.
Trent Richardson just has to settle in Indianapolis. I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, so maybe by 2032 he'll be all set to go.
But in this one, yeah, like I said, the Browns have a lot to prove to me. I'll take Oakland in the 7. I'm pretty sure they can't win outright.
Oh,
but you know what?
No.
After last week, you know what? After last, you know, maybe my bitterness is coloring this one. But after last week, nothing surprises me. Same old Browns.
Browns are going to win this game. There's no doubt about it in my mind. They're going to win this game.
Okay.
But they proved last week that they are not a team to be trusted laying this amount of points. So
nope. All right.
They will win. They will win, though.
Okay. Well, in the end, that's all I care about. But, yeah, I don't think they're going to work. I don't think they're going to cover the 7. Or they might. But, again, like with the Steelers 2 weeks ago, prove me wrong. I'd be happy to see them, you know, come out and lay another 51-0 on them like they did to the Pittsburgh Steelers in that glorious 1989 opener. But, you know, prove me wrong is all I got to say about that. Speaking of which, up next, the 5-2 Colts at the 4-3 Steelers, 4:25 Eastern Time Sunday, Heinz Field in Pittsburgh on CBS, Nance Sims Wolfson on the call. And this is one where Indy is laying 3 on the road, had been 1.5 at the opener. And it's going to be strength on strength here. You keep talking about how I like to come back to the rushing things here. Well, again, strength on strength, the Indy run defense being a strength. Who saw that coming into this year, really? Against Pittsburgh and what they've been able to do with Le'Veon Bell. I go back and forth on this one a lot. This is another one of these ones that's very, very difficult, but part of the reason, and we'll get to this with the Houston game yet to come, I'm not giving up on my prediction altogether that Houston can still win the AFC South, even though I don't think as much as I did previously. I'm not backing off of what I thought of the Colts as quickly as you are. The Colts at 5-3 sort of makes more sense to me than 6-2. And because of that, I'm leery. I don't think much of Pittsburgh personally or as a, in my professional opinion here, but I'll take them getting the 3 on Sunday.
This is a really tough game. You know me and road favorites, they don't mix. I can make a case here. Pittsburgh, a real sneaky win on Monday night against Houston, where, a two-minute implosion by the Texans, reminiscent of the Matt Schaub era, sunk their fortunes. But I'm kind of done playing against the Colts right now. I mean, this is a team that they've got it going on all cylinders. I'll see. This is one of the hardest ones to call. The only thing, though, that would make me inclined to go agree with you in the Steelers, another game where the amount of wagering is totally one-sided and it's all on the Colts, but everyone was on the Colts last week against Cincinnati, and they completely kicked their ass. So,
Colts were one of my three winners last week.
By the way, I just, I don't know what we're doing here. Did we miss my beloved Minnesota Vikings-Tampa Bay Buccaneers game?
I believe so, yeah. We have to get to that one as well. Okay. All right, I must have glanced at that the wrong way. I must have had it as one of my picks, which it is not. All right, we'll get to that after we do the Monday Nighter. We'll get the Monday Nighter out of the way. The 2-5 Redskins at 6-1 Cowboys, 8:30 Eastern time, Monday night, AT&T Stadium in Arlington. Tirico, Gruden, Salters on the call. Dallas is laying 9.5 up from 8.5. And, again, for Dallas, 34 minutes per game exactly in terms of time of possession. I don't think they can do that to Washington. I think Alfred Morris is going to be a pound in the rock enough in there. I think my boy Colt McCoy in that situation there keeps it close enough. Washington gets the back door. I say give me the 9.5.
It's even up to 10, too, so why don't you take the double digits? Look, more surprisingly, I am not really endorsing this double-digit dog. We'll talk more about Dallas next week because I know we're running short on time here. We're going to talk more about Dallas next week. Colt McCoy, look, everyone, the more things change, the more they stay the same in Washington, D.C., okay? What was it, about a month ago, everyone's like, Robert Griffin III, we got Kirk Cousins. Now everyone's like, forget about Kirk Cousins, we got Colt McCoy. Colt McCoy averaged 3.3 yards attempt last week. I'm not crowning him nothing. I think this could be the coming out party in Dallas, but I do not lay double digits in the NFL, so I will stay away.
Colt McCoy, very good, very underrated at taking what the defense gives him. I appreciate what he can do in that regard, certainly.
Yeah, especially when they sack him. He's very good at taking that as well. He's very good at taking sacks, yes, I believe.
When his offensive line lets him down, you're going to have that, no question about it. We have, circling back to Sunday here, this is one of your recommendations. It's the 2-5 Vikings at the 1-5 Buccaneers. Justin Kutcher, David Beal, and the lovely Tandalora Oakman on the call for Fox, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Raymond James Stadium in Tampa. And this is one where the Bucs are laying 2.5 up from 2 at the opener. Another one of these ones, it's very difficult, largely because these are two such execrable teams here, especially the Vikings post-Adrian Peterson. Here's what I keep coming back to is I look at this and I look at how the Bucs are giving up almost 300 yards a game through the air with that secondary. I'm calling it right now. You talked about coming out party for Dallas. This is the Teddy Bridgewater coming out party. Vikings go in there and spank the Buccaneers. Sorry to my good friend in the 21st Century Media Alliance, Jeff Briscoe, a big Buccaneers honk, but his team goes down hard this week.
No. I'll make it quick. This is one of my three recommendations this week. Favorites historically perform pretty well off a bye. You look at Tampa Bay, they're not going to win that many games this year, but if you look at the schedule, this certainly is going to be one that they win. Minnesota, a lot of attrition, gave a game away last week against Buffalo. They have a lot of things working against them. Tampa Bay's not as bad as they should. We said that when they got killed by Atlanta, and they got killed again by Baltimore, but that's not indicative of their skill level. Remember that in between they went to Pittsburgh and won. I know that win doesn't mean as much as it may have a couple of years ago. Bucks, a rare move by me to lay the point. Bucks, second recommendation of the week.
Rare, but not necessarily the last time. Spoiler alert, we'll get to that.
Now, my
three recommended plays for the week. The first one is in this game. It's the 5-2 Ravens at the 3-2-1 Bengals, 1 o'clock Eastern time, Paul Brown Stadium in the Natty on CBS. Gumbel, Green, and Washburn on the call for the Tiffany Network. What I keep coming back to in looking at this game is this. The Cincinnati Bengals were they were a bubble after 2-3 weeks in the season. Everyone was hobbing their knob, best team in the AFC. The defense wasn't as good as it looked. The offense has been exposed without A.J. Green in there. If he's back, he's not going to be 100% this week. Andy Dalton is the pretty much the gerbil that you thought he was coming off of some of his playoff efforts in recent years here. He's a guy who can kind of fluke it out under certain circumstances. Ravens are way too hot right now. This is a pick 'em. Cincinnati was laying 2.5 at the outset, but the Ravens, not having to lay any points, notwithstanding the fact they're a much better team than Cincinnati at the moment, take them outright. That is not exactly a road dog pick for me, but close. Ravens in a pick 'em against Cincinnati on the road.
Now, when this line opened in Baltimore, you get Baltimore plus 3. I would have possibly agreed with you there, especially in a revenge spot for them. Remember, they lost to the Bengals at home in week 1. Speaking of at home, the Bengals kind of seem to be desperately clinging on to that whole, we haven't lost a home regular season game in the last 2 years. Well, you did lay an egg in the playoffs against San Diego. I am staying away here just because the fact that Baltimore isn't favored here actually scares me, because Baltimore is certainly a better team than Cincinnati.
No, that's true. That should be maybe some food for thought there. That makes me a little bit hesitant, but on a week where I don't like that many plays, I'm going to stay on that one. Now, next, another one of my big three. It's the 3-4 Texans at the 2-5 Titans. 1 o'clock Eastern time, LP Field in Nashville on Fox. Kenny Albert, five-time lounge guest, Daryl Moose Johnston, and Tony Siragusa on the call. This is one of the flex games that's going to Fox, even though it's two AFC teams involved. This is a line where Houston is laying 2. It's been a pretty steady 2 the whole week. My thoughts on this one, and I know, Kyle, everybody is on Houston. I know this seems a little too obvious. I know it's a short week, blah, 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 blah. But here's the thing, and looking at the schedule for this year, Houston, by and large, tends to beat who they should and tends to lose to the good teams. I see that continuing. Tennessee's a team they should beat. So they don't have a truly, truly horrific loss on their record despite being 3-4. It would be horrific to lose to Tennessee, even on the road. Take the Texans.
Of course, you're right. Yeah, I kind of just want to get through this because I cannot believe how the stars are going to align on the last game.
Yeah.
Of course you're on this game. And I really can't disagree with anything you said. Tennessee's a bad team.
They are. They're a bad team, and Houston is at least mediocre. I'll take Houston.
Yep.
Up next here, our final one. My 1,000-star
millennium
for NFL.
I can't believe this.
And Kyle, you're on this one as well, on the same side as me. It's the 5-2 Packers at the 2-4 Saints, 8:30 Eastern time. The Mercedes-Benz Superdome in New Orleans on NBC. Michaels, Collinsworth, Tafoya on the call. And again, you said to me off air, this kind of seemed like the New England bounce back game in primetime against Cincinnati earlier in the year. Couldn't agree more. I think that the Packers are a little bit of a bubble right now in terms of public perception. And one final time for this week, ground numbers, 147.9 given up per game by Green Bay. Pretty bad for a 5-2 team. That means New Orleans is going to be able to stay balanced, which is Drew Brees' best friend in this situation. Saints will cover. They've let me down previously, but they're my 1,000-star gold play to the lock of the millennium, covering that 1.5 Sunday night.
I don't care about ground numbers. How about this line? The Saints aren't laying 3 points at home?
Because everyone's on Green Bay. Green Bay's a bubble.
Yeah, they are. Everyone is on Green Bay here. The advanced line, Rick Morris, was at Packers minus 1.5. Which is shocking that the Saints could be a dog at home. That is shocking. I know the record's bad, but their losses have generally been close this year. Their record could be a lot better than it is. They've won 13 straight at home in prime time They have not lost a home game with Sean Payton as the head coach since 2010. This may be my favorite play of the year, New Orleans Saints.
All right, we're both on New Orleans. I'm also on Houston and Baltimore. You are also on Tampa and San Diego. Looking forward to a great week 8, Kyle, and next week seeing you in person to record this. Thank you so much, my friend.
Talk to you then, Ricky.